This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On the breakfast grill today is Dominic Arena, Group Strategy Officer for Axiata. Dominic has over 21 years' experience consulting in the telecoms, media and tech sectors. Axiata has close to 300 million mobile phone subscribers in 10 countries. It's worth about 50 billion ringgit on the bursa and employs around 25,000 people across Asia. It owns Celcom, which is one of Malaysia's major mobile services company. Dominic, today we're going to talk about a strategy and help us to frame a little bit of the backdrop here. Strategically, what's in focus in the mobile world today?
So in terms of, I think, what all telcos, not just Axiata Group, are looking to do in the next five-year horizon is really manage the return on our capital. You know, we invested billions of dollars in our networks. As you know, data yields for basic carriage is compressing. So we need to generate revenues over the top and incrementally in our core business. So we're looking at ways to do that. So one of those ways is moving into adjacencies, such as convergence. So if you're a mobile operator, moving as well into the fixed business, as well as in over-the-top and digital services, as well as IoT, which is the Internet of Things, and enterprise business from a regional and global perspective. So these are the adjacencies that are really going to drive some of our incremental growth over the next 5 years.
Okay, very exciting stuff. And talking about returns on capital, I just want to bring back attention to back home, where Celcom is one of the biggest contributor to earnings for Axiata. And if I look at the local market, as far as subscribers are concerned, it's really a very tight market with around 12 million subscribers each for the major players. But there are major strategic differences in the sense that some players focus on postpaid, some on prepaid. Where does Celcom's strategic positioning stand?
Sure. I think as you've seen, Celcom's been very competitive, in this market, and it's effectively a four-player market plus others coming in. We are balanced in our focus. We are not just a prepaid or postpaid player, but we are quite balanced across. And actually, in the recent year, we have been growing our postpaid base quite healthily with the new plans that were released earlier in the first quarter.
What is the future like for not only Celcom, but for the industry as a whole? Because this is really an area for disruption with the entry of the so-called MVNOs, the mobile virtual network operators. Many competitors are coming in. It looks like it's going to be a hugely competitive landscape for Celcom and Axiata.
Yeah, sure. But again, talking about Celcom and Malaysia and MVNOs, we actually see MVNOs or the wholesale business as a core segment of ours. We were one of the first, if not the first, to get into the MVNO business in Malaysia. And most of the MVNOs in Malaysia are hosted on Celcom. So it is a large wholesale business for us, actually. So for every, you say it's a competing business, but really, for every dollar that is spent on MVNO, we also will receive some value from that.
And that's very interesting because the other players are using Celcom as kind of a technological backbone. Can you use that to your strategic advantage?
Sure, because our business is about scale. And once you gain scale, your unit cost reduces and therefore your margin is higher. So as you'll see, we have very healthy margins at group level and also operating companies. And we do that by achieving synergies and scale across the group. So MVNOs is one way, yes, to achieve greater scale, which helps our core business.
And also, I think the idea of a Celcom brand refresh has been talked about in some of these presentations that you give. Can you tell us a little bit more about what this entails?
Well, I think I don't want to flag any change of direction for the brand of Celcom. We just have a new management team that's just started in the last week, as you know. So we'll see in the next few months what they come out with. You will, though, have seen that we really did refresh our portfolio of products and services earlier this year. We simplified that down. And, the first gold, the first platinum packages have been extremely popular, particularly the postpaid segment, which they target. So I think you'll see us staying on strategy. Celcom is in line with our group strategy and they're executing that quite well.
Still on the local market, of course, when we look at ARPU, which is average revenue per user, that's on a downtrend. Is ARPU growth the end-all and be-all? How important is this as a strategy?
Sure. I think two parts to that question, Julian. Number one is that ARPU is not the be-all and end-all. I think ARPU is a key indicator that a lot of analysts or people use to measure the health of a business. But let me give you an example. In Cambodia, where we operate as Smart, we have roughly ARPUs of $2, which are much lower than Malaysia, which is $7, $8. So, but we still maintain an EBITDA margin of 50%+ in Cambodia. So we can generate those kinds of returns off an ARPU, which is much lower. So you can't really just take ARPU as the be-all and end-all.
Isn't ARPU a determinant of scale? And if you're not big enough in a certain market, you'll be pushed out by competitors. Would you say that that's the case?
Not necessarily. So I'd say that ARPU is a headline indicator from the top line, but the indicator of scale is really your EBITDA margin and your bottom line, because scale comes in with cost synergies, both operating cost synergies and investment synergies that you gain as a group. So ARPU, whilst important, of course, it's not the be-all and end-all. It's really the bottom line that matters.
So when we look at some of the ARPU numbers that exist in Malaysia, for example, and this is really a reflection of how competitive the landscape is. Axiata is around a blended ARPU of around 39 ringgit, whereas this really trails Max's 54, DG 42. So if you say that ARPU is not the end-all, be-all, is there an advantage that Axiata holds in a kind of nimbleness that allows you to have with such a low ARPU?
Well, I wouldn't say we have such a low ARPU. I would say that, and there's many ways to calculate ARPU as well, that if you're adding devices in bundles as well or not. So, but generally we're in line with ARPU. But what I will say is that we can generate scale as a business because we are a large group. We are the second largest telecom operator group in South and Southeast Asia. So that gives us a cost advantage and also management capability advantage, we believe. And ARPU itself, I would say it's a competitive market. In the last year, we've seen 4G launch in Malaysia and really take off into mass market. And in every market where 4G launches, we have a price decline or price pressure that comes in as the market moves to being very much data bundle led. And I would say that in Malaysia, Celcom has been one of the leaders in moving to data-led bundles and pricing. And as I mentioned earlier, we did that earlier this year with our first packages with Celcom. So that might reflect some of the lower ARPU that you mentioned versus the competitors.
This morning, we have Dominic Arena, Group Strategy Officer for Axiata. Dominic, recently the government also reallocated spectrum to the big three telco players. And to me, this is really confusing, all this talk about spectrum. Give us an idea of the spectrum situation in Malaysia right now. Do we have enough of it to do the things that we want to do on our phones?
Yeah, look, spectrum is really important. Spectrum is like the oxygen for mobile operators, because every time you use your data service or voice service, you need spectrum. The recent allocation, we think, was a very rational and balanced outcome. We believe that it creates certainty, which is important for us, and also sustainability of the market. So we're quite happy, as we've said, with the outcome. Now, to the question of do we have enough? How long is a piece of string? You know, it's the greater scale you get, the more customers you have, the more they use data, you need more spectrum. So we'd love to see 700 megahertz spectrum being allocated, which effectively just gives 2 to 3 times greater coverage for the same investment, which gives everyone better broadband. So that's something we're looking forward to as part of the allocation. But we're very happy with what we have right now.
And what would you say is the quality of mobile reception in Malaysia today, and how does spectrum affect that?
Well, typically, generally speaking, the more spectrum you have, the better quality network you can build. It's a trade-off of how much you invest in base stations versus how much spectrum. It's an inverse relationship, if you like. So more spectrum gives us a better quality network.
So do we have to live with some of the poor quality that we experience today?
Well, I'm not sure I would say we experience poor quality. I use our service every day and I'm pretty happy with it. I think these days as well, data becoming a lot more important. I think the data quality, the broadband quality in Malaysia is excellent. The speeds are excellent. And, of course, we'd love more spectrum, as would everyone. And the sooner we see 700 megahertz and the other bands such as 2300, 2600 addressed, then I think that would be great for us.
And also huge amounts of money have to be paid for this spectrum. I believe 800 million ringgit for Axiata, together with an annual maintenance fee. Would this kind of cost have to be passed on to the customers?
No, absolutely not. I mean, as part of our investment, spectrum is included there. So it's a cost of investing in our business. And to be frank, as I said earlier, the outcome of the current reallocation was quite rational and balanced. And on a benchmark basis, I don't see it as you characterize it as huge amounts of money. I mean, sure, it's a lot of money, but for us, it could be a lot more if you look at other markets. So I think it's quite a balanced and sustainable outcome.
We have Dominic Arena, Group Strategy Officer for Axiata, this morning on The Breakfast Grill. Up next, we'll take a closer look at Axiata's regional strategy. On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Dominic Arena, who is Group Strategy Officer for Axiata. Now, Dominic, Axiata, of course, holds a lot of controlling interests in regional mobile companies, 80 to 90% in the leaders in Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Indonesia, and so on. Is there some kind of a theme to these ownerships?
Well, I think we are an operator of assets and telecom businesses. We're not a financial investor. So we like to have control of our operating companies, which we do in those markets you mentioned. And that allows us to have synergies across the group. Again, going earlier to what I said about scale and synergies in the group, by having the management, by having that majority ownership, we can bring scale and leverage to the group.
But in some countries, for example, India and Singapore, where you own M1 and India, I believe you own Idea Cellular, the holdings are quite small, around 20 to 30%. How do such low stakes tie in with the overall strategy?
Yeah, well, like every rule, there's exceptions to the rule, and those two are currently the exceptions. But look, they are great businesses, and we're happy to be an investor, and we do have involvement in those businesses. We don't control them, but as I think we've said previously, that if there are opportunities from time to time that come up, then we would seek to adjust our portfolio accordingly.
Do you prioritize some of the higher growth markets around the region? For example, Vietnam, Philippines, which you don't have presence, and some of the other frontier markets like Cambodia, Bangladesh, are these considered some of the prized strategic assets?
I think we see our current portfolio as a whole is very strong, and I wouldn't say that there's a priority of one country over the other. We're in ASEAN, which is a 600 million strong region, plus we're in South Asia as well. And we believe that the growth, both in terms of natural organic market growth and also the opportunity to add on incremental revenues and ARPUs in the more mature markets, gives us a great balanced portfolio.
And recently, there was a Bloomberg article which speculated on Axiata selling some stakes in some regional companies. Can you maintain strategic interest with many of these regional companies with a lower stake? Because 80, 90%, you don't really need that, right?
Sure. I saw that speculation. I think, that article you're referring to suggested that, 11 or 20 or 30% we may be divesting in certain opcos. But this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. We actively manage the portfolio like any good portfolio manager of assets. Other companies such as Vodafone Group have gone through similar portfolio rebalancing. And it's an active thing we do every day. But getting to your point of, we already own 80, 90% of an asset. So let me give you an example. If I look at that speculation that says we're going to sell 20% of a certain asset that we already own 90% of, we still own 70%, which continues to mean that we control the asset, we continue to appoint management, we get all the synergies and the scale benefits. So there's absolutely no difference from one day to the other if even hypothetically we were going to do what they speculated.
What's interesting also is whether you need to raise the cash for further strategic acquisitions. For example, if you pare down the stakes, you may develop a funding war chest.
Well, it's a good point. And as I said, we're an active portfolio manager. And rebalancing your portfolio can enable you to release some capital from one asset and redeploy it either into another or into other strategic areas. We have a very clear 5-year long-range plan, and that includes core business plus new infrastructure and platforms and digital services. So we are constantly looking at how to best deploy our capital to get the maximum return on our investment.
The other two are very major drivers of Axiata earnings: Celcom in Indonesia, Celcom XL in Indonesia, and Dialog in Sri Lanka. And XL in Indonesia has been making sort of losses for the past 2 years. What's happening there? I mean, it's a big market.
Look, it's a big market, and we do continue to grow in Indonesia. So I don't want to overshadow the performance there. But we've been on a turnaround, and that's been clear. We've told the market in the past year we're on a turnaround, and we're very confident that turnaround has reached the bottom of its turnaround position. So we're very confident that we're going to see positive results coming out of Excel very soon.
And Dialog in Sri Lanka, Robi in Bangladesh, 80 to 90% holding. But India, another very important market, only 20% holding. What explains that huge discrepancy?
Well, I think you'll see that we've owned the asset in India as a result of a merger from a number of years ago. And, you know, I think it, as I've said, as an active portfolio manager, when opportunities come up to upstake in certain assets or downstake in certain assets, we will evaluate those opportunities as they come. So at this point, we're happy with what we have. If an opportunity comes up one way or the other, we'll evaluate it in the normal course of business.
So would you say that Axiata is a company that focuses on major emerging markets? How are you going to bring together this 300 million subscribers that you're in control of strategically moving into the future?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. And this is where we get into our next 5 years, where we're effectively going to transform ourselves to a next generation digital company. It's not something that we're about to start. We actually started it a few years ago. We've been investing and moving into digital services since about 2013, 2014, but we've done it very quietly. Today, I can tell you that we are an investor and or strong partner in a number of digital services businesses, more than 25 of businesses today. Some of those include music services like Yonder Music, which today is available to our customers in all of our markets that we operate. And Yonder Music is a social media-based music service. We are a shareholder plus an operational partner with them. And that is a way to improve our customer lifetime value by keeping people on our networks and offering them new services.
Dominic Arena, Group Strategy Officer of Axiata, is on The Breakfast Grill today, and we're talking about Axiata's strategic direction. Dominic, your mention of Yonder is really very interesting because Axiata has made a series of acquisitions, six to be exact, over 2015 in a number of sectors, like Yonder is in music, also social media and MVNO in the US, e-commerce in South Korea, and a few other acquisitions in India. Are you getting into other people's territory? I suppose that's what disruption is all about, but will these acquisitions actually amount to something big?
Sure. Well, as part of our Axiata 3.0 strategy, which defines the next 5 years of our life cycle, we are clearly allocating a portion of our cash flows since 2013-14 into investing into digital services and adjacent businesses. We are not there to create the next Facebook per se or Google. We are there as a large number one investment thesis is to support the core business. So where we can add on and invest in or partner for digital services that enhance the core business and give our customers more by using our networks, then that's where we prioritize our investments. So we have made a number of investments. The order of magnitude, though, of those investments is a lot lower than putting money into networks. So we have the ability to do some R&D, if you like, or experiment, and we're not going to be betting the farm on any one particular, you know, a digital service or OTT application.
And where do you see the competitive advantages coming from as a result of all these acquisitions?
Well, I think that there's an ecosystem. I'll give you an example. So many people may not know, but we actually own a majority stake of 11th Street, which is one of the leading e-commerce platforms in Malaysia. And also we are a 50% shareholder in Elevenia, which is a sister company of that in Indonesia. The e-commerce business has a huge upside potential to use analytics to cross-sell customers between the two platforms. So customers who may be using the e-commerce platform may not be a customer of Celcom or Excel. Actually, we found that the majority of customers, new customers to the e-commerce platform, were not customers of the network. So we have the opportunity to bring those over to become customers of ours. So we can get net acquisitions through that, and we can offer further value to our customers across platforms as well.
Everyone's talking about fintech. What are some of the ideas that emerge from fintech that Celcos can jump into as well?
Sure. Well, this is again an area where we have both organically as well as investment-wise gotten into. And we have a platform called Easy Cash, which was incubated by us and came out of our Sri Lanka business Dialogue. It's been awarded many awards through the GSM Association and others as a mobile money fintech platform. And we've rolled that out across the group under various names in different opcos. So we're already doing that. We're a partner in micro insurance with a company called Beamer Insurance, where a large proportion of their base is our operating company customers. So fintech and in terms of money transfer, remittance, electronic top-up, potentially peer-to-peer lending and even deposit accounts are areas that we believe have huge opportunity for us. And, you know, right now, even emerging markets like Nepal have tenders out for mobile banking or mobile payments licenses, which we are very keen to be involved in.
And that's very interesting because for a country like Nepal, I would imagine that there are many who would be underbanked. Do you think that Celcos will one day be serious challenges to the banks to take away some of these banking services?
Well, I'm not sure we are trying to challenge the bank. I think it's, again, it's a way to create an ecosystem where we're adding incremental value to our customers by being a customer of our networks. And that is really the number one investment thesis for us, improving convenience, improving lifestyle, the digital lifestyle. But you also see banks moving the other direction too. A number of banks recently have launched internet-only banking services. So there's been banks in the US, banks in India who've done that. So I think we're kind of converging. You know, it's not all about head-to-head competition, but we partner a lot. So we do have lots of partnerships where we don't need to make investments or head-to-head compete, but work together and go to market.
But I don't see the banks actually going into a telco service. They would use a telco service, which is to your benefit, but telcos actually have the advantage of actually going into fintech.
I guess you can see it that way. I have seen, though, some banks looking at MVNO-type services, though, as a loyalty proposition to premium credit card holders, etc. So there is some movement in the other direction. Again, we are not necessarily looking at this stage moving into deep, large-value deposit accounts, certainly not mortgages or anything like that. So it's not like we're really trying to head into the banking territory, per se.
The other big thing that everyone is talking about is Internet of Things, or IoT, and you were quoted in the press as being very positive about the whole development, the $30 billion in potential revenue for the industry. And as you mentioned, there's something called Axiata 3.0 as well. Can you tell us more how Axiata can get into the IoT business?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned Axiata 3.0, and I'll just take a second to explain. So there are three core thrusts of our strategy. And one is obviously our core business, digital communications and connectivity. The second is infrastructure and platforms. And the third is digital services. IoT really straddles those last two thrusts, which is intelligent platforms, so being in the platform business as well as the connectivity business for IoT, and then also in the applications on top and over the top, including devices on top. And I did mention, I was quoted as saying, in our footprint markets, we believe there's a overall $30 billion revenue opportunity by 2020, and that includes everything from connectivity through to services, security, devices. And we are starting to play in that space. We made an announcement a few weeks ago with a trial partner for connected cars. And we believe that the rise of the machines, which is what we look at IoT being, is the next wave of growth for us.
And how big do you see these businesses becoming? Because you spend a lot of, I suppose, management time trying to go into a lot of these small businesses. The other one is also, of course, Edotco, which Axiata has gone into and owning a portfolio of 16,000 towers and 12,000 kilometers of fiber. Are all these businesses going to be big enough to become meaningful for Axiata?
Well, I think mentioning Edotco, it is now the 12th largest tower co in the world outright. So I think just from its inception a few years ago, I think we've done a pretty good job in creating a quite large business. That's a business that we have said is going to have a value of several billion dollars, you know, in the next couple of years. And it's strategic to us because it serves not only our own businesses, but generates third-party income from our competitors and partners as well. So that is a big business. We've proven we can create that business. In terms of IoT and digital services and even enterprise business, we believe that this, is in aggregate, will become a material business. Just looking at that $30 billion opportunity in 5 years' time for IoT, we believe we can capture a generous proportion of that across the region.
If they're not revenue generating, I suppose they can also be a very valuable, these are very valuable cost centers that support the core business of Axiata, would you say?
Yeah, it's a good point, Julian. And we talk about enablers. So sometimes you invest in something because it's an enabler for something else. So partly IoT and the intelligent infrastructure and platforms become enablers for us to be able to do other things in our business that might generate cost savings, competitive advantage, or direct revenues as well.
Thank you so much for your time. And that was Dominic Rina, Group Strategy Officer for Axiata on this morning's Breakfast Grill. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.